Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have one case on our 3 o'clock docket for oral submission. It's my understanding that counsel have announced ready to the clerk in the time that they would like to argue. And if you all are ready to proceed, we will move forward. Clerk will call our case, please.
The court will now call Jamal Edward Park versus the state of Texas. Mr. Cole Knox will argue for the appellant. Mr. C. Conder will argue for the state.
Ms. Knox?
Please the court, counsel. This is a false testimony case of the most unjust and unfair nature, in that it involves the false testimony of not only the civilian victim at issue here, but also of the law enforcement testimony presented by the state of a state actor for an officer who ended up also being not only the arresting officer, but a victim of the crime of aggravated assault herself. The due process violations arose through not only false testimony, but also the state's failure to correct the testimony. The false testimony resulted in tainting the credibility of the witnesses, in contaminating the entire punishment hearing, and also, and also in the defense strategy in presenting its case. Because of the false testimony and the material nature of the statements, we believe that both the testimony of the civilian victim and of the police officer have met the due process test for false testimony and due process violations. The appellant first challenged
this. How does this rise to something more than mere inconsistency in testimony, which occurs in many, many, many cases, and doesn't rise to the level of false testimony? I mean, many times witnesses tell contradictory stories, sometimes at trial.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree with that. And I think the difference is versus whether or not it's trivial or material goes to several considerations that the Court of Criminal Appeals has laid out. And the specific test being whether or not there's a reasonable likelihood that it affected the fact finder's decision and punishment. And some of the factors that the court has considered, the Court of Criminal Appeals has historically considered, whether it's a knowing presentment of false testimony or unknowing, is whether or not the witness was the sole witness to a material issue, an elemental issue. Here, the officer was the sole witness to her own assault, as was the victim the sole witness to his own assault. At sentencing, the officer testified that she suffered a dislocated jaw. This is extremely more severe than any other injury that was ever, that's in any piece of evidence still currently to this day. The only injuries she sustained were a cut on her elbow with 2 stitches and a skin infection and a wrist injury. Here, another factor that the Court of Criminal Appeals often looks to is whether or not the fact finder relied on the testimony that is alleged to be false. Here, the judge said on the record that he gave her a broken jaw, you know. So he then elevated her statement of a dislocated jaw to saying that it was a broken jaw, when in fact there's no evidence of a jaw injury. There's only several references throughout the medical records provided by the state in the motion for new trial hearing that she complains that her jaw hurts. 3 months later, she then got a root canal, and the evidence shows that the root canal was not related to the assault in any way, and that it was the result of a dental issue. There's been absolutely no evidence linking a root canal to the assault, and even further, there's a very good argument that her complaints of jaw pain were related to the root canal that she needed. Even more, simply complaining about jaw pain, which the state continues to argue still today to confuse the issues, simply complaining of jaw pain does not create a medical diagnosis of a dislocated fractured jaw, which is very, very serious, that requires specific treatments and at the very least, a complete medical diagnosis of a dislocated jaw to be able to treat it properly. The Court of Criminal Appeals also routinely considers whether or not there's independent impeachment evidence to discredit the witness. Here we have a police officer, a corporal in the Arlington Police Department. There's obviously no criminal history to use to impeach, no prior inconsistent statements, no motive, obvious motive to lie. Clearly, she had one. And no knowledge of any sort of mental illness. That's also a distinction. Two of the cases where the court goes into an analysis about this are the two cases that the state continues to rely on, which are ex parte Weinstein and ex parte Chavez, in which the Court of Criminal Appeals recently considered in ex parte Franklin, which is not cited due to its recent decision in April of this year. Both in Weinstein and Chavez, the court said that because there was so much more evidence to be able to impeach the credibility of these witnesses that are at issue, there's already evidence to suggest that no one believed the witnesses at that point, and this one small piece of testimony that you're claiming is false wouldn't have done anything because nobody believed them anyways. It's hard to argue that no one believed this officer. In fact, the credibility of this officer was so damaging. I mean, it's why it caught us by surprise. It's why we are here today to bring justice to a surprise element of a severe injury that is not supported by any evidence at all.
Did you preserve error at trial and object to the testimony regarding the dislocated jaw?
Your Honor, it was thrown in on leading questions at the very end of her testimony, and since we were caught by surprise, we didn't object because we did not expect a police officer in uniform to lie as to an injury. We thought maybe we had missed something. That's why we had the motion for a new trial hearing, and they produced the medical records, and we went through the medical records backwards and forwards, and there's no injury.
Cox.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is your position on the state's contention that the open records, that the state open records policy followed by the district attorney's office allowed examination of all the medical records in advance of trial? Did you do that? Was that done in the trial court before the trial?
It's a very good question. I've thought about that a lot. No, Your Honor, we did. We signed off on a discovery notice that we received what was in the online discovery portal, which is an old system that no one uses anymore. And we thought we had checked everything. So, of course, at the motion for new trial, the indexes to the discovery portal were entered into evidence. And whereas we had medical records of the defendant, Mr. Parks, and of the civilian victim, Juan Angel, those were clearly labeled in the indexes as such. Now, they were all categorized as medical records, including the police officer's medical records. But on the police officer's medical records, they're identified by a series of numbers that was not clear, or at least the state didn't believe it was clear. So they had to handwrite on the index at the exhibit at the motion for new trial to be able to describe what these are clearly marked as on the index. I think if you consider that in the context that the evidence actually doesn't prove what they claimed it would prove, that it wouldn't have mattered. Even if we had read the medical records backwards and forwards for a punishment hearing in which we pled guilty, which we didn't have any notice of an injury to begin with, nothing in the indictment, in her offense narrative, in the photos of her from the hospital put us on notice that we needed to do extra research to try to find inconspicuously labeled medical records. But even if we had done that and been able to repeat the content of the medical records to her at the sentencing hearing, I still would tend to believe that I would think I was missing something when a police officer testifies that she suffered such a serious injury. Until she testifies to such a material and opposite fact, I'm going to believe her until I can go through and prove it. I was shocked. Also, to her credibility, the DA and for the state argued in closing argument, would the pressure be on us to make sure she, meaning Corporal Oreck, face every extent of the law? Because she's a public official and police officers are held to a higher standard, and they accept that, and I think they should be, but if we're going to go that way, they should be held to a higher standard when they're a victim. I couldn't agree more. When a police officer takes a stand and says, I was at this scene arresting this dangerous and violent individual who's made a horrific mistake, and I got caught up in it and became a victim myself, you're going to believe what comes out of her mouth. But now that what she claims is not the truth of what actually occurred, she deserves to be held to a higher standard. And she's held to a higher standard because she's a state actor. Whether it's a legal standard or not, we want to believe police officers. We want to believe prosecutors. That's why when, at the same time, the prosecutor doesn't correct false testimony that the police officer is testifying to that's being given on leading questions from the prosecutor, you tend to believe it. And that's why it's such an egregious error in this case.
There are several references in the record to a problem with the jaw in the medical records. Is there anything in the records that indicate that she was examined for a dislocated jaw and it came back negative?
Yes.
In other words, that it just simply was never dislocated.
Yes, Your Honor. The night of the incident, she went to the emergency room. She complained of jaw pain. I can't remember if it was an x-ray or an MRI, but they ran a test. It came back negative that her teeth were normal, that her jaw was normal. Then later, when she went, the emergency room then discharged her with notice to return to go to her doctor within 7 days to get her stitches removed. 2 days later, she went to a clinic to where she had never been before, went through a thorough physical examination, as you would need to anytime you establish a doctor-patient relationship, and she never once mentioned jaw pain. She goes back the next morning and says, oh, I forgot to complain about my jaw.
But does she also complain about TMJ at some point?
That was later, after she continued to go back to the clinic that day when she complained of jaw pain, or a recent visit to that, the clinic doctor ran another x-ray or MRI because she was complaining of it. Almost every time she went to the clinic for a follow-up for a workers' comp claim, she complained of jaw pain. Almost every time, the medical diagnosis was an injury was the infection from the cut in her elbow or a wrist injury. Every single time she asked the doctor, or the doctor decided on her own, to make a claim to her employer as to restrictions in her injuries, never once was there anything about, oh, you can't eat, you can't drink, you can't go back to work because your jaw hurts. Almost always it was only a diagnosis as to the elbow and the wrist. There was one mention of a TMJ. TMJ is still a far cry. I think I have TMJ. I don't have a dislocated jaw. It's a far cry from a dislocated jaw. When someone has a dislocated jaw, they have to be, their jaw has to be sometimes knocked back into place. They have to wear a head deal to keep their jaw in place for a while. It's much more, causes much more consequences to your day-to-day life than TMJ or jaw pain. And the fact that the doctors never diagnosed her with a dislocated or any sort of a fractured jaw, and then even if the TMJ could somehow be confused as a dislocated jaw, which I don't think any medical expert would ever agree to, there's still no link that the TMJ months later was related to the assault. The only other thing I'm seeing my light that I would like to call to your attention is the effect that Officer Corporal Orig's testimony had on the entire trial, that then when Juan Angel testified that he did not smoke marijuana that night with the defendant, that that goes, of course, to his direct credibility when we believe there's evidence otherwise. And I'll finish now and close on rebuttal, but the marijuana not only goes to his state of mind and ability to recall the incident that night accurately, but it also prevented us from being able to be confident in the Arlington Police Department officers who were there to support Corporal Horrig, who were the only ones who could dispute the Juan Angel testimony. Thank you for the opportunity.
Mr. Conder?
May it please the court, Stephen Conder on behalf of the state of Texas. I will focus my argument on the second and third points of error on the false testimony claim. A false testimony claim by nature from the Court of Appeals is that it must be established that it was false, it was truly false, and was material, and that the defendant must establish that by a preponderance of the evidence. Now, at the sentencing testimony, Corporal Horrig testified that she was hit in the face and head multiple times by the defendant with his fist, that her jaw was dislocated and swollen for several days, which left her unable to eat or drink, and that she suffered a broken tooth, which later required a root canal and a crown. Now, at the motion for new trial, the appellant filed a motion for new trial, and they based it upon just a small item of things to claim that it was false testimony. They looked at only her offensive narrative, they looked at the indictment, and they looked at photographs. And they seemed completely unaware that there was a vast array of other evidence that had been provided to them through the open file system, which Mr. Sparks had acknowledged that he received both at the motion for trial hearing and in the signed document. Among the things that showed was we had two officers who each in their offensive narrative stated that the appellant had struck her in the jaw, in the face several times, that she had a swollen jaw. She was holding her jaw, complaining of pain. For the appellant to now argue that we have no, that jaw pain could have been related to some root canal months later, is just not, is bewildering, because there was narratives from the police officers on the scene about this hit to her face, to her jaw, and her complaints about jaw pain the night of the attack. Furthermore, the medical response team said that she had complained of jaw pain, that she'd swelling to her cheek. They said she had difficulty speaking and she had a cold pack to her jaw. She continuously said throughout her whole treatment, look, I have these jaw pain from this. Now, there's nothing from this that says that this is very consistent with her testimony at the sentencing hearing. Moreover, the defense never put on any evidence to show that this was false testimony, that this was actually false. If you look at the cases that the Court of Criminal Appeals has addressed in false testimony, Chabot and Weinstein, in each of those, there were cases where it was proven by other evidence that this testimony was truly false. Weinstein involving whether the defendant told the truth about whether a witness had told the truth about suffering hallucinations. And Chabot is a case where the witness's testimony was proven false by post-conviction DNA testing. Here, there just is simply, this is her description of the injuries that occurred to her, and it is consistent with all the other evidence contained in the police reports and the office reports, which were provided to the defense well ahead of the sentencing hearing. As for Mr. Angel's testimony, yes, he's told multiple stories, and witnesses tell multiple stories, but they have not met their burden to show that whatever he said what he said at the sentencing was true or false. And in fact, Mr. Sparks was aware of it. It's on the record that he was aware that this defendant told multiple stories and did not take the opportunity to cross-examine him and to impeach his credibility about multiple stories. Finally, there really is no showing of any materiality. The defendant pled guilty. This was all about sentencing. The trial court assessed fairly light sentences for both. He assessed a six-year sentence for a first-degree case, a six-year sentence for a second-degree case. The defendant could have been looking at 20 on one case and life on the other. But the trial court gave a fairly light sentence to that. And I think the state has outlined in their brief a significant other evidence from which the trial court could base its sentencing on. This is not a false testimony, a due process violation. There is no showing that these witnesses actually testified false or that affected the decision the trial court made in assessing punishment. As for the first point of error, the state believes the trial court's well on its right to allow a motion for new trial to be overruled as a matter of law, that trial courts do that routinely, and that there is whether or not a hearing was held in process or whatever makes no difference. The trial court has that absolute authority. Unless there are any questions, the state would just pray for an affirmance.
Rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding the state's claim that the swelling and pain was just her description of what happened, she should have just said that. If she would have just testified to, I experienced jaw pain from this, I had a swollen jaw, that's all she had to do. We wouldn't be here today if she had done that. And the state failed to correct that testimony, knowing good and well that a dislocated jaw creates a false impression in the mind of the trier of fact's mind, especially when they then state in pronouncement of sentence when we're arguing for probation that she just had a broken jaw, you know? It's on the transcript. The fact they can stand up here and credibly or attempt to credibly argue that is befuddling to me, that they can't see the difference between complaining of jaw pain and a medical diagnosis for a dislocated jaw when that's what she represented. As far as the distinctions between Chabot and Weinstein, those both involve the unknowing use of false testimony. Part of the biggest problem here is that the state knew what the facts were. The state had the medical records. They proved that they knew everything in the medical records when they produced all hundreds of pages of them at the motion for new trial hearing. It's up to the state to correct the testimony of their own witness, who's also a state actor. I would have loved to be able to do it. I was not in a position to do it, read the medical records 800 times before sentencing or not. That goes as well for, and I loved this, the reference to Chabot and how they had scientific proof of DNA evidence to prove that the statement was false. Here, we have medical proof to show that the statement was false about her dislocated jaw, and that all of the evidence in the medical records are absent and void of any reference to a medical diagnosis of this injury. Juan Angel, we did cross-examine Juan Angel. Mr. Sparks asked Juan Angel three times about whether or not he smoked marijuana on the night in question. We were left in an impossible situation. We're still trying to wrap our minds around how Corporal Oreg could have had a dislocated jaw that we didn't know about, and the only one who could have impeached Juan Angel with extrinsic evidence was to call Officer Banks to the stand, who was the one who talked to Juan Angel the night of the incident, and he was there voluntarily, not under subpoena, to support Officer Oreg. Even if we had called him to the stand, what is he going to do? He's going to take his partner's colleagues back. I don't know what testimony the state is capable of producing at this point. It's unfair to say that we should have done a better job on cross-examination. And it's for these reasons that we would ask that the court abate the appeal and return it to the trial court for findings in a reasonably expeditious manner.
Before you sit down, would you highlight for me where is the evidence that proves that her testimony was false? You're saying it's in the medical records, and that's the place that you're emphasizing that underscores your position that the testimony was false.
Well, yes, Your Honor, it's hard to prove a negative when it's not my evidence, but yes.
I've spent a lot of hours in the courtroom, and I understand about trying to prove negatives, but I'm only asking you where is the evidence that you proved that testimony was false?
And, Your Honor, respectfully, the state claimed that the evidence of to support her dislocated jaw at the motion for new trial hearing was in the hundreds of pages of medical records produced, and there's no medical diagnosis in the medical records to support her dislocated jaw.
Their failure to produce evidence addressing your burden of proof gives you support in proving that the evidence was false?
I understand your position, Your Honor, but...
I'm just questioning. I don't have a position.
I understand the question. When she says that she has a dislocated jaw and that never happened, then the only way I can prove that is by showing what did happen and how it's not included in the happenings at the doctor's offices.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Knox.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Conder. We appreciate you appearing here today, and we appreciate your arguments and your briefing as well. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business, and the court will be adjourned.